Hello, everybody. We are proceeding with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 63. We'll see about the length of this adventure. It may be an hour and 15 minutes or an hour and a half. I'll try to keep it in 15-minute increments. We had just finished with page 142, and we were discussing the difference between the response of the Aquarian individual upon the mutable cross. Such an individual might become what is called a faithful employee, the adherent and worker in some firm or business, and this is an example of group consciousness at a certain level of development and expression. Within that business, within whose limits all his interests are confined, and to whose welfare all he has is consecrated. We can already see the group consecration, even at that earlier level of expression upon the mutable cross, before the wheel has really begun reversing. Upon the fixed cross, this consecration to others becomes, I would say eventually, world service. Not at first, but certainly by the time we have achieved or moving towards the second initiation and passing the third initiation, and especially towards the fourth initiation, world service, liberated world server. Aquarius, we are told, and we move on here. Aquarius, we are told, governs the blood system and the circulation. Therefore, it's related to the heart, and it's related to the sign Leo, which rules the heart. But we can see already that the heart is very centralized, and the circulation is distributive. And we discussed earlier that the glyph of Aquarius shows no sign of centralization, but are two lines of outgoing force, electrical force, I would add, and that the glyph of Leo, says the Tibetan, shows some point of centralization. At least it does have that circle before the lion's tail takes off in an upward direction from the circle. By means of the blood, the life force is distributed throughout the entire body. So in this case, Aquarius serves the function of the heart. These two are working together, and the individual who's centered in soul, or even centered in spirit, in Leo, through Aquarius, can distribute that centralization throughout the ring pass knot of his consciousness, and even beyond. It is therefore symbolic, this is the sign Aquarius, is therefore symbolic of the task of the liberated Aquarian, who dispenses the spiritual life, dispenses spiritual life throughout the fourth kingdom in nature. The liberated Aquarian. Well, when are you truly liberated? A kind of liberation takes place at the third initiation, because the ancient authority of the personality is ended, but that personality is not totally subdued until the fourth. I would say liberation involves the fourth initiation. It is therefore symbolic of the task of the liberated Aquarian, who dispenses spiritual life throughout the fourth kingdom and nature. And we're going to see a lot of this type of distribution or dispensation during the Aquarian age, when all manner of useful subtle energies will be widely distributed and can be appropriated by those who know how to do so. Okay. Right. The Aquarian influences are also felt as life-giving in other forms of planetary life and other kingdoms in nature, but with these we will not deal, as we are confining our attention to humanity. I think we will see a strong vitalization and increasing radiation from the nucleus of various types of members of the lower kingdoms. I think There will be a move towards the increasing intelligence and domestication of the domestic animals, a move towards individualization. We do remember that at least some few of those higher domestic animals will in fact be individualized in this round and not have to wait until the next. I think we will find increased radiation, radioactivity in the mineral kingdom under the Aquarian dispensation, whether the smaller age of Aquarius or the larger, and perhaps new forms of plant life will also arise. Aquarius, as you know, is one of the arms of the fixed cross. This cross is outstandingly the cross of discipleship and of the three major initiations in connection with which it might be pointed out. Okay, so the first three initiations, are taken on the fixed cross. The fourth initiation is not taken necessarily upon any of the crosses, but is an interim condition where in a man steps down symbolically from the immutable cross and has not yet mounted the cardinal cross. The cross of discipleship, the cardinal cross is the cross of initiation, the mutable cross, the cross of average living, of average life. Its experiences occur before the true reversal of the wheel gains momentum. We might say that the wheel begins to be reversed while still on the mutable cross, but does not gain that kind of power that is necessary to produce the soul-inspired life until we reach the experience of the fixed cross. Now, I think back on page 119, there was a similar kind of tabulation in relation to the mutable cross. I wonder if I can go to that page in esoteric astrology, and let's just see if I'm correct about that. Yes, a little earlier than page 119. Yes, 118. We begin to study all of the mutable cross signs in the earlier phases. We discuss the mutable cross signs in relation to the mutable cross itself, and we go on page 119 to discuss the mutable cross signs when the consciousness of the individual is found upon the fixed cross. Now here we don't have exactly that full presentation. We do have, however, discussing the fixed cross when the man's consciousness is upon the fixed cross, and not discussing the fixed cross when his consciousness is actually upon the mutable cross. I think, of course, we could do that if we wished. Maybe we'll try after we go in reversed order. Let's see here. Okay, well, in Aquarius, perhaps it's enough to say that when the fixed sign Aquarius is expressing in terms of the mutable cross, the mantram, let desire in form be ruler, is operative, and the man has a sort of a superficial sense of self, a superficial mutability and activity, and is attracted to many points within his environment and uses those points for his own purposes. He moves backwards towards Scorpio, where he begins in earnest a struggle to fulfill his desires at any cost. What is the statement involved with, let's see, with Scorpio? We have here, let desire in form be ruler, and in relation to Scorpio, we have let Maya flourish and deception rule. So there is a earnest and intense Martian pursuit of all that the world of Maya offers, and the man is thoroughly deceived by the apparent reality of the personality life. Moving backwards, which the Tibetan does not do in this particular case, in Leo, of course, we have the centralization of the man and the preservation of his own sense of selfhood, a lower egoistical and egotistical sense of selfhood becomes his dominating intention, and let other forms exist. I rule because I am. He begins to understand the fact of being, but he understands being only in terms of his lower personal selfhood. He, indeed, is the center of his own stage and considers himself the most important, well, he's hardly objective about himself, but the most important subject within his field of consciousness. In other words, there is he himself and the remainder of his field of consciousness, and he is the considered to be the dominating individual. And finally, moving backwards, or let us say in the clockwise manner, we come to Taurus, a fixed sign, but considered on the wheel of form, or the clockwise wheel. We have a concentration of desire, and we have these desires pointing downwards or oriented in a horizontal manner, but not in a vertical manner, because there is still a great cleavage between the man's consciousness and any sense of the soul. And so in Taurus it is said, and the word said, let struggle be undismayed. It's a fourth ray sign, and there is a great struggle to achieve one's desires. There is a strong concentration of desire, and a man is very much the victim of his astral body. He is not an example of the purified bull. In other words, his bodily forces are not consecrated to a higher objective. They are simply consecrated to the fulfillment of his instinctual, emotional, and mental inclinations. So all of this is the fixed cross in the mutable cross phase of consciousness. This is very important to remember, and I'm sure we all do, that if you have many mutable signs, it does not mean that you are on the mutable cross in consciousness, or it doesn't mean you're on the fixed cross or the cardinal cross, but you could be. If you have many fixed cross signs, say your sun or your ascendant or both are in the fixed cross, it doesn't mean that you are actually treading the path of discipleship and are crucified upon the cross of the soul or the cross of discipleship. You could very well be upon the mutable cross in consciousness, or you could be on the cardinal cross in consciousness, and the same for the cardinal cross. Certainly, a domination or a plenitude of the of cardinal signs does not mean you're on the cardinal cross. As a matter of fact, in terms of almost all human beings, how many human beings that we know are actually on the cardinal cross in consciousness? In other words, how many of them are full fifth-degree initiates? Well, they're not walking the earth, at least visible to us. So when you are have a majority of signs or a great emphasis on the cardinal cross, it you will actually find your focus in consciousness either on the mutable cross or on the fixed cross, even though you have a majority of cardinal influences. I think that's clear to everyone, but it is a factor to be considered in esoteric astrology. So now we're talking about the fixed cross signs when an individual actually is taking, in that process where he's taking the first, second, or third initiation. In Taurus, desire is transmuted into aspiration. It is elevated. Its objectives become higher. Desires are not downward tending, and they are not horizontal. They are upward tending. Desire is directed towards objectives which are of a higher vibratory nature than the present actuality in which the individual lives. You might say, you know, suppose he has some degree of ability in a given area. He aspires to improve that ability. That's a humble example. Suppose he is an aspirant. He aspires to become a disciple. Suppose he's a disciple. He aspires to become initiate, and so forth. Desire is transmuted. That's a Uranian word, changing the vibratory condition of the state. The desire is transmuted into aspiration. Darkness gives place to light and illumination. Lead us from darkness to light is a very strong Taurian mantra. The eye of the bull is opened, which is the spiritual third eye, and that is that magnetic area, etheric area surrounding the pineal gland, which is considered to be the eye of the soul, and through which one can see into the subtle realms and even into the realm of the soul. The eye of the bull is opened, which is the spiritual third eye, or the single eye of the New Testament. If thine eye be single, said the Christ, thy whole body shall be full of light. And conversely, as the body becomes increasingly purified and filled with light, and as the energies of the body become consecrated to the consecrated to spiritual objectives, the single eye can develop. Okay. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. The illumination achieved in Taurus is not only the illumination of consciousness, it's also the elevation of the light value or light expression through the power of Vulcan in the entire energy system. So it's an elevation of vibration under Vulcan. Vulcan, in a way, rules the law of vibration, and under Vulcan, the vibratory response of all areas of the energy system can be increased. Of course, when Vulcan represents a material force, it can also represent inhibition and the slowing down of vibratory frequency. But we're not talking about that particular lower expression of the sort of a material resistance which Vulcan can represent. If thine eye be single, said the Christ, thy whole body shall be full of light. And this is the illumined individual with the aura which shines. The single eye takes the place of the two eyes of the personal self. So the personal self is involved with duality, and the soul self is involved with unity as perceived through the single eye. Soul self is involved with unity as perceived through the single eye. The attention of the man becomes focused upon spiritual attainment. He treads the path of discipleship, and we remember that the highest form of aspirational idealism is experienced in Taurus. When we think about Taurus in a conventional sense, we think of pretty material objectives. We think of the senses, we think of the appetites, and all that. That just shows us that the ordinary astrology has very little understanding of the luminosity towards which the higher Taurian individual is directed. So from the two horns of the bull, from the duality of the Taurian upon the mutable cross, we move towards the unity of vision and understanding of the Taurian upon the fixed cross. It is the ability to possess the illumined consciousness which understands all things as within the field of unity, which understands all things as demonstrations of light which are coherently related to each other. This is the Satori. This is the enlightenment. This is the illumination. The kind of experience coming from the East, popularized in the literature of the East, known as enlightenment. Whether we have it coming from the Zen tradition or the normal Buddhist tradition or from the Hindu tradition, there comes a point at which subject and object are united in the state of contemplation, ruled by the planet Venus, which, interestingly, is very strong in the sign Taurus. When the Venus rulership and the Vulcan rulership of Taurus are merged, then we have this fusion, this enlightenment. And add to that the Alta Major center, then we have the triangle in the head or around the head, and there, through this triangle, we achieve the evocation of the third eye. But that will only happen when we begin to elevate our desires so that the energies necessary to produce this triangle in the head and its resulting radiance are available and not used in other ways. Okay, now we're talking about Taurus on the fixed cross, when the consciousness is fixed cross consciousness. What about Leo on the fixed cross? Leo on the fixed cross. In Leo, the self-centered man becomes eventually the soul in life expression. And there's the word expression, because we know that Leo, too, is one of those outward pressing signs, and it so often comes forward with an exteriorization of that which is found within itself. It is dramatic in that way. It wants to show forth all that is contained first within the personality, and we see so much of that today in the dramatic arts and the films. But also that which is contained within the soul, within the causal body. So the soul-centered man in Leo wants to express the soul through the personality and is very sensitive to what may be the content of that causal body or egoic lotus that is to be expressed. Sensitivity is the word. The self-centered man becomes eventually the soul in life expression and focused on the achievement of the spiritual goal of selflessness, which is the exact opposite of that which the earlier Leo individual expresses. He expresses selfishness. Leo can be one of the most self-centered, self-preoccupied, selfish signs. But later, as we know from the labors of Hercules, that heights of selflessness can be achieved when the lower lion, the king of beasts, is subdued. Or as Hercules does, he strangles the king of beasts. I guess the king of beasts, once strangled, can no longer express through the throat center, can no longer let those lower forms of expression come forth. In this sign, and this is very important here, Leo, on the fixed cross, he undergoes preparation for the first initiation and takes it also in this sign or under this sign, when it is the rising sign. Now, you know, we've been talking here about the fixed cross in the fixed cross stage of consciousness, but DK goes a little bit before the true fixed cross stage in consciousness is operative, and talks about how Leo helps to lead the individual to the true fixed cross. You see, here we're going back and we see this fixed cross is outstandingly the cross of discipleship and of the three major initiations with which it might be pointed out that. Okay, so in a way he's talking about the stage in which the three major initiations can be taken. That's in a general sense. But when discussing Leo, he also talks about preparation for that first initiation, at which time it can be well and truly said that the man is definitely on the path of discipleship and is definitely upon the fixed cross. And of course, initiation is a process in which increasing selflessness is developed. In this sign, Leo, he undergoes preparation for the first initiation. So he is relinquishing his egoistic motives and he is beginning to serve the higher self. Gemini helps to make him aware of what that higher self is, the brother in the light, the higher brother. And he is willing to give up a part of himself to the dictates of that higher brother. The first part to be given up is the etheric physical part, then the emotional part is given up, then the mental part is given up at subsequent initiations. In this sign, therefore, he undergoes preparation for the first initiation and takes it also in this sign, that is when the sun is in Leo, or under this sign, when it is the rising sign, becoming the lion who seeks his prey. Now, he's the higher lion in this case, that is, the personality who becomes the captive of the soul. So let's put it like this, the higher lion, or higher self, maybe I should capitalize that, or higher self, seeks the lower, I wish I could spell here, self as prey. So we are really two lions. Ultimately, we are three lions. In a way, every centralization within a periodical vehicle, whether the personality, the soul, or monad, is a lion of a kind. Maybe the truly rampant lion is the monad itself. So the higher Leo individual is centralized increasingly within the soul, and is identifying as a higher self and looks for evidences of selfishness, pride, self-centeredness, self-preoccupation, and systematically eliminates those forms of expression and expresses rather that which the higher self dictates or indicates. If you're a Leo, then maybe you understand something of this process, I would guess. Okay, and of course, you know, when we're looking for people who may be taking the first initiation, and we find a dominating Leo influence in the sign, sun in the sign, or the rising sign Leo, we may be put on the track of that first initiation possibility. I'm not saying that you must have Leo if you are going to take the first initiation. DK elsewhere in his books discusses the importance of such signs as Capricorn, of course, for the first five initiations, and Gemini being very important for the first initiation. Aries always initiates possibilities, and therefore it is, in a way, the sign of initiation itself. And there are other signs as well. Scorpio is active at each of the first three initiations. There are many combinations under which and in which a man can take initiation, but this is an important one, and it is a major relinquishment of selfishness, which is the worst or the most difficult of the Leonian qualities. Okay, we move on discussing the fixed cross in the fixed cross stage of consciousness. So, you know, when Scorpio is active in the mutable cross phase of consciousness, the individual can become what DK has called the monster of selfishness, you know, totally identified with the vices which later have to be recognized, subdued, and finally entirely conquered. In Scorpio, on the fixed cross, in the fixed cross phase of consciousness, in this sign, the disciple undergoes those tests. That's the word. Test, trial, and triumph. Those are three words involved in Scorpio. Test, trial, and triumph. Undergoes those tests which will enable him to take the second initiation and demonstrate that the desire nature is subdued and conquered, and that the lower nature is, by being lifted up in the air, i.e. into heaven, i.e. subjected to the Buddhic impulses, is capable of reaching the goal for this world period, and that from the earthy foundations of Scorpio the personality can be so tested that it shows fitness for the world service demanded in Aquarius, fitness of strength and detachment. It is a very demanding task to become a liberated world server, because the Aquarian individual is a carrier of burdens, whether it's the burden of humanity or the burden of the world. It's a task of holding up a great weight, and so Scorpio is a sign in which strength is dramatically increased by passing the various tests. A test is a confrontation where two types of energies or forces are contending with each other, and the one that contains the higher type of energies has to prevail. Although the Scorpion individual is no stranger to temptation, which is a magnetism towards the lesser of the two energies, and a kind of desire to indulge in that kind of energy instead of uphold the higher and more detached type of energy. In this sign, the disciple undergoes those tests which will enable him to take the second initiation. Well, okay, let's look at it this way. In a way, maybe Leo is the sign most identified with the first initiation, Scorpio most identified with the second, and Capricorn most identified with the third. But Capricorn rules all five initiations, and the peculiar testing potency of Scorpio is active at all three of the first initiations, and there are ways, when you're thinking of light and illumination and the expansion of the self, that Leo is not only involved in the first initiation, but has important connections with the heart of the sun for the second initiation, and even with the central spiritual sun for the third initiation, and so forth. So there are ways in which the different signs can provide different types of energies which are needed for various initiations, not just one. But no doubt about it, these great struggles, especially the struggle over the greatest and most powerful elemental, the astral vehicle, Scorpio is most identified with that particular struggle, which occurs at the second initiation. And he demonstrates then that the desire nature is subdued and conquered. In a way, the symbol of that is the moon, which is falling in the sign Scorpio. The moon in this particular case, representing all the lunar vehicles, but especially the desire body. And that the lower nature, by being lifted up into the air, that means subjected to the energy of the intuition, which is free of illusion, and being subjected to the plane of air, which is the Buddhic plane, is capable of reaching, the lower nature is capable of reaching the goal for this world period, which presumably is to be completely soul-infused and even liberated into a new sequence of development that follows after the fourth initiation. And from this very earthy foundation of Scorpio, which involves death by suffocation even, and you suffocate in the Maya glamour and illusion, the personality can be so tested, you know, throwing up one obstacle after another against which we, the disciple becoming initiate, prove our prowess, that the personality can be so tested that it shows fitness. There's the idea of intelligence, very strong Mercury in Scorpio, and strength. Fitness, intelligence, and strength for the world service demanded in Aquarius. So one is definitely proving one's strength in Scorpio. And so often you find the warrior there. It is a warrior sign. And we all know that whatever types of strength we may be talking about, the warrior must have the strength, or he cannot prevail over his adversary. This is beautifully expressed for us, says the Tibetan, in the legend of Hercules, the sun god, the true, the man as the true soul, who overcomes the nine-headed hydra, or serpent of desire, by being forced to his knees, and in all humility, and from that position of humility lifts up the serpent into the air, and then deliverance comes. And the ruling planet of this plane of air, from this perspective, is Mercury, a Buddhic planet, and the plane of air is the Buddhic plane. So the hierarchical ruler, Mercury, represents that lifting up into a state of intuition where illusion no longer predominates. Hydra is the serpent of desire, but desire can be connected with all three bodies. So a person can be in an illusory life and desire to live out his illusions. He can desire to live out all his desires. He can desire to live out his instinctual promptings. So desire is the great factor to be overcome at the first three initiations, but especially at the second. Though, you know, he's still subject to desire when he's subject to illusion. He does not want to relinquish those wrong thoughts and wrong interpretations which fill the mental body. He still has the desire to retain them and to live by them. So, you know, is Hercules more known for subduing the Hydra, or is he more known for subduing the lion? I would say that those two labors of Hercules out of the 12 are the ones for which Hercules is best known in the literature of the world. Okay. Now we're discussing the fixed cross. And we're discussing the fixed cross in the fixed cross stage of consciousness, which extends from the first initiation through the third. So, in Aquarius, in this sign, the long effort of the soul is consummated. Remember, we talked quite a bit about Aquarius as a sign of consummation. The long effort of the soul is consummated and concludes the experience of the disciple upon the fixed cross. Well, okay, you know, in this case, DK seems to be hinting that the fixed cross experience lasts until the fourth initiation. In other places, he's more explicit, and he says after the third initiation, you step down off the fixed cross symbolically and take the fourth initiation on neither cross. At that point, of course, you bear your cross, just as the initiate Jesus did in the crucifixion experience. In Aquarius, in this sign, the long effort of the soul, millions of years in duration, is consummated. Well, the third degree is a kind of consummation, And that is the culminating initiation of the fixed cross, really, I think. And Aquarius is frequently found at that degree, though if we choose to think of there being some fixed cross influence involved in the crucifixion, we do know that one can take that liberating initiation strongly under Aquarius, as I discussed in relation to Francis Bacon and Sir Thomas More, and they're probably, oh, Krishnamurti, I shouldn't have left him out. He had that strong Aquarian ascendant, and it is well known in the Theosophical literature and in other places that he was passing through the Arhat initiation, fourth initiation, and he also had Scorpio containing Uranus, the ruler of Aquarius. So we've discussed that exalted position as being very important for the fourth initiation. Okay, the man then takes the third initiation and becomes free from personality control, taking the next two initiations upon the cardinal cross. Well, okay, this is a generality, because later Master D.K. becomes more specific and lets us know that really the fourth initiation is not taken precisely upon the cardinal cross. And consummation, well, yes, the third degree is a mountain top. You reach the summit, the first great mountaintop, and take a consummating initiation. But in terms of the liberation of human life, it cannot really be considered a consummation. The fourth degree must be considered a more important consummation. But let's just say that both of these degrees, third and fourth, have their consummating value, let us say. We stand above the personality, its ancient authority is relinquished, and the soul is in control to a very great extent. And then, finally, at the fourth degree, there is no longer a need for incarnation in the lower three worlds unless deliberately for service purposes. So these are high points, therefore consummation. The third degree is a high point of vision, let us say. Illumination, enlightenment, satori, these things come. The fourth degree is not only a high point of illumination, it's a high point of willful achievement over the forces of the lower three worlds. So there's still more will involved in the fourth degree than in the third. And of course Aquarius is a sign of a powerful will. It has this strong connection with Uranus, which is a first-ray monadic planet. All right, well, there are many things to say, and as you ponder on these things, important insights will come to you, maybe insights different from the ones that I have been proposing. The Tibetan has given us many seed thoughts, many indications, and they will grow differently in differing consciousnesses. And, we will, as a group, round out the presentation of esoteric astrology, presenting as a group more than any one thinker could possibly present on the subject. DK goes on, I might here give you the following names for the three crosses taken from the ancient archives and therefore difficult to translate. Well, the ancient archives are not having books or sources of knowledge which are written in English, obviously. They're probably written in the ancient sacerdotal language, written in Sensar or some other languages, symbolic languages, which have to be translated into our own more pedestrian languages. But anyway, the ancient name should give us some deeper understanding of their nature. The mutable cross is called the cross of changing and absorbed experience. The X part is pretty important, of experience, I guess you can have inner experiences too, but the X means in a way that it's happening outside yourself. And so we are oriented towards the outer worlds of the senses particularly. And as we, through many changes, confront all different kinds of combinations of energies and forces, we gradually assimilate and absorb them into our permanent atoms. And these experiences and our interplay with them and the values emerging from that interplay become part of the resources of our causal body. The cross of changing and absorbed experience. This is the place of action and reaction. Okay, so it's strongly under the law of karma, the law of action and reaction. In that respect, very Libran. So we learn the nature of the energy we send forth by the reaction which others and the environment have in relation to the energy which they receive from us. So this is the place of action and reaction, and we learn the effects of causes. When we are the cause, what is the effect resulting from actions we have produced? And in general, and in the environment, what are the reactions to causes? We learn the nature of the lower worlds through the study of cause and effect, action and reaction. This is the place of action and of reaction, of karmic control, Saturnian control. We are not free from karma by any means, and of response to impacts leading to the awakening of consciousness to the nature of the goal ahead. The consciousness is benighted on the immutable cross. It's pretty much in the hall of ignorance or in the early part of the hall of learning before the fifth petal really begins to be activated. So we are very much under lower Saturn and under the natural laws. And we are under the law of cause and effect. We are subject to the law of love, because the law of karma is in a way an aspect of the law of love. In other words, loving right relationship is the final production of the law of karma. This is the place of karmic control and of response to impacts, and it all leads to the awakening of consciousness to the nature of the goal ahead, and the goal ahead is the soul. It is the higher mental plane, it's the spiritual life, the awakening to the nature of the soul goal, awakening to the existence of the world of the soul, and to the initiations which lie ahead and which open up all sorts of energetic possibilities and possibilities in consciousness for the human being. So that's a good title, which we should remember. I'll make it a little bigger here. The Cross of Changing and Absorbed Experience. Now the Fixed Cross, what is this called? The Cross of Transmutation. Mutation is a change, and we are crossing across, we are going across through the word trans. That's what trans is meaning. We are passing from one level of experience to another. We are raising the vibratory rate of the material in our vehicles. We are purifying the material in these vehicles so they can bear or receive vibration from higher levels of energy impact. Transmutation, the passage across from one state of being to another through the agency of fire. Fire is the great purifier, the great transmuter, and we have an elevation of vibratory quality, vibratory frequency in the matters of our various vehicles. Transmutation is, in a way, the lowest term involved with change, this spiritual change. transmutation first, then transformation, then transfiguration, then finally maybe something we can call translation. And then, you know, perhaps we have something we can call transubstantiation, though we will have to be careful about how we define that. The fixed cross, the cross of transmutation. The life of the personality is transmuted into the life of the soul. Desire becomes aspiration, and selfishness is transformed, there is that higher word, into selflessness. So there's a reorientation occurring on the fixed cross, and all that we were as the natural man is elevated into a new condition, and we are finally achieving a disidentification with the personality nature and identification with that field of experience, higher field of experience we call the soul, the cross of transmutation. Okay, let's look at the name for the cardinal cross. This is the cross of transcendence. Really, the fixed cross name was the most complicated. The cardinal cross, the cross of transcendence, personality life and form life and planetary life no longer control. The man stands free. Well, we have to wonder what he means by planetary life, because there are many different stages of planetary life. It's not just the lower three worlds that we can call planetary life. There is a buddhic plane, an atmic plane, a monadic plane, a logoic plane, and so forth. And the planetary logos himself has higher vehicles, and these vehicles are composed of cosmic astral substance, you know, whatever substance is at that high level, and cosmic mental substance, and so forth. And the experience upon the cross of transcendence of the cardinal cross is a very, very lengthy one. The shortest of all cross experiences is the experience upon the mutable cross. Fixed cross. Just, you know, some thousands of years. Just in the same way that the bodhisattva's duration in office is much more shorter than the Mahachohans or the Manus. They are in office for a much longer time, and similarly the fixed cross of the cross of the soul, the cross upon which the soul is developed, is the shortest of the three experiences. In this particular case, however, the duration of the cardinal cross is by far the longest, even though duration of the mutable cross, which lasts for some millions of years, is relatively lengthy. How long is our experience upon the cardinal cross? Well, I think Sanat Kumara is upon the cardinal cross. I think the great beings in cosmos are upon the cardinal cross. So in a way, life upon the cardinal cross is virtually endless within our particular cosmos. But that's way beyond the possibility of verification. Suffice it to say, the great beings are crucified upon the cardinal cross, and the duration of their lives is very lengthy compared to that of man. Okay, so what do we have? Let's just review. He tells us from the ancient archives, there are names of the three crosses. The cross of changing and absorbed experience is called the mutable cross, the cross of transmutation, the fixed cross, the cross of transcendence, changing and absorbed experience. Okay. Substance, the ocean of life, water, the symbol of desire, and the impulse to incarnate are transmuted into soul light and light substance, and the urge to tread consciously the path of return, plus the longing to serve. Well, I think what he's talking about here is the contrast between life upon the mutable cross and life upon the fixed cross, in relation to which we have just discussed the four fixed signs. So let's repeat this. substance, the ocean of life, and I guess he would mean lower substance and not light substance, although essentially all substance is light. Substance, the ocean of life, water, the symbol of desire, and the impulse to incarnate. These are all repetitive experiences upon the mutable cross, are transmuted into soul light. We'll call it a higher type of substance. Soul light and light substance, and the urge to tread consciously the path of return, plus the longing to serve. And that is particularly what distinguishes experience upon the fixed cross, the urge to tread consciously. It's we're going now beyond instinct. We're going beyond the intelligent but unconscious promptings of our lower nature. We have a self-conscious realization and a vision accompanied by choice, by the urge and choice to follow that urge to tread the path of return to our Father in heaven. Let us say that on the path of return, we have a sighting of the monad, even though we don't know what the monad is until much later on the path of return. We have at least the idea that spirit exists, something much higher exists, there's a higher self and something higher and higher and higher, and we have the urge to change our energy system, to transmute our energy system so that we can come in contact with those higher frequencies. And as we do so, our love and compassion and our sense of fellowship and our sense of unity increases. We become much more sensitive to the condition of others like ourselves. We feel a kinship, and we realize we are not alone, and we begin to feel other people's sorrow and happiness, and in general the states that they are experiencing, and we want to help improve those states because we begin to participate in their states. We don't only participate within our own ring pass knot, as we begin to receive the impacts that they from the energies they are experiencing, impacts help us experience their energies as our own, their states as our own. Desire is developed and focused in Taurus. Now this is what he says, man upon the mutable cross, Taurus upon the mutable cross. Desire is developed and focused in Taurus when the man is upon the mutable cross and progressing around the zodiac in the clockwise manner. Desire, it is reoriented and repolarized in Taurus when the man has mounted the fixed cross. So there is a change in the orientation of desire. That's one of the most important things we can say about Taurus here. In Taurus, the direction of desire is reoriented. Okay, now let us see. I hope I have not lost my audio connection. I think I'm still... No, it says it's restored now. There are these fluctuations. So anyway, I'm making a recording for you, and even if I've lost my audio connection to the internet, there's nobody on but me right now. So I can continue, and hopefully this will work out for you. All right. Desire, then, in Taurus, is redirected. And perhaps, one has a real vision in Taurus of what low desire is and what high desire is. And there's a struggle between low and high desire, which is a continuation of that theme. Let struggle be undismayed. So there is a polarity realized of the directions in which desire can lead, lower desire and higher desire, and the struggle between them. That kind of struggle is also occurring in Scorpio. But here at least in Taurus, we have a very strong reorientation of the desire nature. And the desire is eventually relinquished in that sign. So, desire, is reoriented repolarized in Taurus when the man has mounted the fixed cross, and is eventually relinquished in this sign. Well, we know that in the labors of Hercules, Hercules overcomes sexual desire in Taurus, but there may be many other kinds of desire that he overcomes there as well. And the great example, exemplar of the relinquishment, relinquishment of desire in Taurus is the Buddha, who tradition tells us was born at the full moon in Taurus, achieved enlightenment at that full moon, and died also at the full moon in Taurus. A great teacher, greatly identified with the sign Taurus, and teaching that desire for the ordinary world is the cause of all pain and suffering, teaching that in his Four Noble Truths. In the polar opposite of Taurus, Scorpio, the personality is humbled. Now that's that image of the personality falling to its knees. It realizes, let's just say, personality is humbled. The personality realizes the great opposing forces, and that it cannot conquer them by ordinary means. In other words, the lower ego cannot conquer. Lower ego cannot conquer them. To fall to one's knees is the symbol of giving up the lower ego. So the personality is realizing the great forces of its own nature. Maybe we should say that it is the disciple who is realizing these things. The disciple within the personality realizing that the personality forces are tremendous, and the powers of the lower ego cannot conquer. Only higher powers can conquer. And falling to one's knees is the relinquishment of the reliance upon the lower powers and an appeal to the descent of the higher powers, which can indeed conquer the opponent. So the personality is humbled and brought to grips with the soul. There is the idea of the wrestling match and of Jacob wrestling with the angel on the ladder. In that sign, the personality is occultly killed and resurrected into air and light. And this also, well, does this actually happen at the second initiation or at a higher initiation? Certainly the desire body, and desire is particularly connected with personality, just as illumined mind is with soul, love and illumined mind. The personality is occultly killed and then resurrected into air and light, that's the Buddhic plane, in order to become from that moment the servant of the soul. In other words, this Buddhic receptivity of the individual makes the disciple within the personality the servant of the dictates, influences, and desires and intentions of the soul. So we have a very strong Taurus and Scorpio polarity here. Desire is reoriented, the soul is valued, the light is valued in Taurus, but proving that one has finally become strong enough to live by soul values, that is done in Scorpio, when soul values and energies wrestle with personality values. It's an undetermined outcome until the disciple in the personality falls to his knees and in that way invokes the soul energies, or the energies also of the Buddhic plane, which can descend and decide the battle. He sees through illusion, because he not only falls to his knees, but he lifts the Hydra up into the air and the light, where it dies because it cannot be sustained by the energies it needs. Those energies and forces don't exist in those high worlds. And so we see through what we thought was so real before, and illusion and glamour and Maya then lessen their grip upon us. So after that point, the personality or the disciple, rather, within the personality, becomes the servant of the soul. I guess he's, you know, he's given us these four signs now, and now he's talking about some of their interplay, some of their dynamics. In Leo, the individual awakens to his own identity. Exactly what is he in the context of men and in the larger context? He concentrates his purpose. Concentration is particularly a Leo word. It's the very first phase of the meditative process. It is associated with Leo. The individual awakens to his own identity. What am I as distinct from others? The first ray is needed to know that. The fifth ray is needed. He concentrates his purpose. There's the first ray. And the fifth ray, helping with concentration, learns the lessons and uses of selfishness, for that is one of the best ways to learn and to discover that it is contrary to the laws of the soul. I guess we experience some difficult reactions in this world of action and reaction when we display selfish behavior, because it is discordant with, disharmonious with the general environment, and the environment gives us unpleasant feedback for our selfish behavior, because after all, everything really is based upon the law of love, and we are karmically corrected so as to bring ourselves more in alignment with the law of love. In other words, selfishness never pays. You think it's going to make you powerful, but it leads to a state of isolation and powerlessness. And then, he learns the lessons and uses of selfishness, and is eventually so cornered by the life process. It's a bit like checkmate, isn't it? You know, think of Leo the king. He becomes powerless. He loses all his men. He loses all his powers. And he can become cornered and can't make a move. He's in a state of checkmate, that he becomes aware of the futility of self-interest. And this is sometimes symbolized in psychology by the dream that the king is dying or the king is dead. The old lower egoistical methods of living just don't work. They don't lead to real empowerment. Empowerment comes through cooperation. It comes through the adding of the forces of others to one's own forces. That is achieved through the energy of love, loving relationship. And selfishness is the very antithesis of that. It cuts off all relationship and therefore disempowers and isolates the individual. Cornered. He becomes cornered. So the futility of self-interest. It's a bit like the first ray having to stand with his arms in the cross and say, I'm sorry, I need you, I want to cooperate with you, I want to love. I'm paraphrasing that which happens to the first ray soul in the technique of integration when he finally awakens through the light that shocks to all of the damage he has done and to the ultimate futility of his own selfish self-interest. In Aquarius, the opposite sign to Leo, the man awakens to the beauty of group life, group interest. Why beauty? Because the group life brings in all of the archetypes in relation to each other and presents a splendid display of interrelated design, all the factors of which need each other. So in Aquarius, the man awakens to the beauty of group life, group interest, and his individual responsibility, there's Leo again, towards the group, and begins to live his life and to spend himself in the service of humanity. Spending. This is very interesting because those outgoing lines of energy in Aquarius are the giving forth of energy, which is spending, expending, pouring forth. Apparently this energy is leaving you, but because it is selfless and because it reinforces the group as a whole and the strength of the group, it actually does return to you, and the whole or the group reinforces your own individual life. So therefore, it is indeed, as the Christ said, better to give than to receive, because the giving itself is a form of reception, and not just the reception of that which you have given, but the reception of that which you have given perhaps tenfold or a hundredfold or, you know, limitlessly more returning. To those who give all they have, all is given, the bounties of the universe. So there are some interesting interplays here, I think important ones. I think everybody, of course, has to become aware of the futility of self-interest and how disempowering it really is, how isolated it really is, how you're left alone, unsustained by the wholeness of things, and unable to take advantage of the beauty of the other archetypes in relation to you as an archetype. All the archetypes are needed to fit together in order to make the grand and glorious picture of the great whole. So you may be an archetype in your own right, but unless you are in relation with the others, then the full beauty of the design cannot be seen. Okay, moving on. Let's see where we are. Yes, we have passed the hour point, and if GoToWebinar doesn't surprise me and cut the... See, when you're talking to yourself, talk about the futility of self-interest. Anyway, when you're talking to yourself, this GoToWebinar program shuts you off after about an hour and 45 minutes, if it's kind. It might shut you off after an hour and a half. You always have to have someone else there as a listener or a companion or someone with whom you're sharing the webinar in order for the webinar to continue. So we're having kind of an example of the futility of the solo effort. I've tried to think of ways around it, but the only way to do it is to have maybe two computers at the same time, and I'd have to be signed in over here as someone other than myself into the webinar that I am giving, so that I can continue with this process. Anyway, we have another 15 minutes or so to go if I'm to stop at an hour and a half. Okay, in connection with the question of consciousness, students would find it illuminating to study the subject along the following lines. Remember, we can study everything from the point of view of matter, form, substance, and then also from the point of view of consciousness. What is consciousness is a real something. I mean, it is that which is growing or meant to grow in this particular solar system. Our sentiency, our sensitivity, our ability to touch and be impressed by and to receive other energies and forces. This is really what is growing in this particular solar system and on our planet at this time, with its emerging second-ray soul. So, in connection with the question of consciousness, students would find it illuminating to study the subject along the following lines. We've been talking about the fixed cross in the fixed cross stage of consciousness, and we've been talking about the interplay of fixed cross signs with each other, Taurus and Scorpio interplay, and Leo and Aquarius interplay. Remember, we must not think that somehow Scorpio is a better sign than Taurus, let us say, or that Aquarius is a better sign than Leo. You know, you can have kind of they can go like this, they can keep rising. You can, Taurus can bring illumination to Scorpio, and Leo can bring the sense of the one self, not just unity in diversity, but of the one self and synthesis to Aquarius. So each has a gift for the other. Okay, we have, in terms of consciousness, subjective latent consciousness in Aries. It is so far not fully expressed. It is undeveloped. It is the very beginning. But the seed for the growing consciousness is there, and a final climax in Aries can also occur, a great realization of being. In other words, the usual limitations of what we call consciousness gives way to the realization of being. But that's later in the game. The consciousness of duality in Gemini, so there's definitely a consciousness of being, two different centers of energy, being the personality, being the soul, and oftentimes with the disciple in between, trying to decide which he shall identify with and which he shall be. There is the mass consciousness in Cancer, and we are aware of this world of glamour, illusion, and Maya in Cancer. And so basically aware of the anima mundi, of consciousness within the form. And we are aware of all the life on the lower 18 subplanes of nature. We are aware of elemental life. We are aware largely of that which is called the realm of the lunar lords. Now, in Leo, the first phase develops as individual self-consciousness. Not only I am, but what is it exactly that I am? What's going on within my ring personality? I become intensely self-aware. Often artists at a certain phase are doing this. They try to feel exactly what are the themes that they have to express, what's going on within their psyche, and they try to exteriorize this. It's a form of sensitivity. As Leo is the sign, it is said of sensitivity, but I would like to call it sensitivity to the boundaries of self. Then there is equilibrized consciousness in Libra, where we begin to identify easily as either the soul or the personality, and both simultaneously. So there's a harmonization here of the pairs of opposites, and we are able to look at life in an equable and balanced manner. Equilibrized consciousness, and this is eventually the aspect of the entire man, which is demonstrating neutral electricity or equilibrized consciousness, is really the soul. So we stand between, able to harmonize the two parts of the pairs of opposites, seeing the value of both, and able to have the two flow into each other, able to see the two, as it were, married to each other. And finally, group consciousness in Aquarius, which we have been discussing. We extend our sentiency throughout the many factors which may be unitively related and collected together, and we begin to participate in a larger ring pass knot than our own. Progressively, the ring pass knot widens under Jupiter, with Jupiter the esoteric ruler of Aquarius, until we are able to include in the sense of I am a that which is quite large and inclusive of many other selves, until we realize, let the group realize, there are no other selves, which is more like a Leonian realization. But we start to identify with larger and larger groups. You know, we can see that even nationalism, well, let's see, even loving one's city, let's say that, or nationalism, patriotism, is a form of group consciousness. We can see as well that a humanitarian attitude, you know, I care for all humanity, I am humanity, I identify as humanity. This is a large group consciousness. And if we extended it to the planet and to the solar system, probably beyond most of us, maybe all of us, we would have a still larger group consciousness. Somehow identification with the solar system, with the solar logos, would be called universal consciousness. And you know, some people like to extend that idea to what they call cosmic consciousness, though DK tells us it's not really cosmic in that sense, but it's certainly vast in extent. I'm thinking about Walt Whitman, the poet who I think was a third degree initiate, but he had a very strong Leo in his nature, and he was able to sing the song of myself, he called it. He was celebrating himself in all things. He had certainly gone far beyond the individual ring pass knot and was tremendously inclusive. DK hints that he was a first-rate type. I do think he was a first-rate soul with a second-rate monad, and that somehow at the third initiation it was this tremendously inclusive, loving, embracing second-rate monad which was demonstrating in his poetry. I don't read poetry so much, but when I do, I love Walt Whitman, especially because of that expansive, inclusive, identificatory attitude that he has. You can just feel his ability to make us participate in all things. All right. We have just, I'm aiming for an hour and a half to try to cheat the hangman here. The hangman is the the webinar technology, which just wants to cut me off at some point. So I'm hoping that an hour and a half will be allotted to me here. The distinction between exoteric and esoteric astrology lies in just such recognition as listed above. Remember that esoteric astrology, is the astrology of consciousness. And its concern is the growth and sensitization, deepening of consciousness. Exoteric astrology is something different. Exoteric astrology deals with the characteristics and qualities of the personality and the form aspects. In other words, what is the personality per se, and that's very important to know, of course. You know, it's good for an esoteric astrologer to have that kind of exoteric knowledge of what is the nature of the form through which the soul is trying to express. Exoteric astrology deals with the characteristics and qualities of the personality and of the form aspects, the three aspects, or four, and also with the events, happenings, circumstances, and conditioning environment which appear in the personal horoscope, indicative of planetary control and not of solar control, indicative of the control by the planets in the houses, I think is what DK is saying, and not controlled by the solar angel, the solar factor. Now, look, when you ask yourself, well, what do these events, happenings, circumstances, conditioning, etc., what do they mean? When you ask, what does all this mean, you are entering the fold of esoteric astrology. Because we can look at things and hope that they will come out well for us, want to make the best of it, I want good things to happen to me, I want to avoid bad things happening to me, the little personal me. But when you try to say, well, what is the gain for consciousness, whether good things happen or bad things happen, then you have entered the realm of esoteric astrology. You know, and in the very first rule, for the 14 rules for applicants, if he cares not for the suffering and pain of the lower self, if it is immaterial to him whether happiness comes his way or not, if the sole purpose of his life is to serve and save the world, and if his brother's need is for him of greater moment than his own, then the fire of love is irradiating his being, and the world can warm itself at his feet. So this is a requirement for initiation. So things happen, good and bad, from the perspective of the form, but good can be bad, and bad can be good from the perspective of the consciousness. A lot of good things can happen to you, and you may learn nothing. A lot of apparently bad things may happen to you, and consciousness may be the great benefactor. Of course, that's all easier said than done. Easier said than appreciated. But in the middle of so-called bad things happening, we have to say with Master Moria, well, obstacles are possibilities. What is the good that is occurring in this? Esoteric astrology concerns itself primarily with the unfoldment of consciousness. That's just the key thing. the unfoldment of consciousness through the personality horoscope, with the impacts which awaken it to the peculiar gifts of any particular sign and ray endowment. So it's concerned with impacts, and consciousness is awakened to the fact that gifts are coming through signs and planets and rays, and those gifts have to be appropriated, have to be utilized and somehow assimilated. So, you know, it's not just what's happening to me, it's what's the value of what is happening and how can I utilize what is happening to expand my consciousness. So concerns itself primarily with the unfoldment of consciousness, with the impacts which awaken it to the peculiar gifts of any particular sign and ray endowment, and with the reaction of the man and his consequent enrichment through his response to the influence of a sign working through the esoteric planets from the angle of humanitarian awareness of discipleship and initiation. Well, that's quite a mouthful. That's one of those ongoing sentences by the Tibetan which is so synthetic in nature. But esoteric astrology is concerned with the reaction of the man. And he's going to be enriched by what he reacts to of the incoming energies and his consequent enrichment, energy enrichment, consciousness enrichment, through his response to the influence of a sign or ray or planet working through the esoteric planets. No, let's keep it the way it was. The influence of a sign working through the esoteric planets. His enriching response through his response to the sign, which works through esoteric planets, increasing in him humanitarian awareness, the potential for true discipleship living, the potential to become an initiate. So let's read that whole thing again, because that's just, you know, that's a marvelous thing. And I think esoteric astrology concerns itself primarily with the unfoldment of consciousness. Okay. With the impacts which awaken it, i.e. consciousness, to the peculiar gifts of any particular sign or ray endowment, a great appreciation for these impacts that are coming at us and through us and wondering what we can do with them and learning what to do with them, and with the reaction of the man and his consequent enrichment through his response, to, if he learns how to respond to the influence of a sign working through the esoteric planets from the angle of humanitarian awareness, discipleship, and initiation. In other words, the gifts of the esoteric planets concern these three things. Gifts of the esoteric planets concern humanitarianism, the discipleship living, initiatory power and potential. He will be enriched if he realizes this and uses them in this way. This deals basically with his experiences from the angle of the three crosses, which involve first cross, mutation, then direction, and finally initiation. This is excellent. It involves mutation on the mutable cross, direction on the fixed cross, and even on the fixed cross there's going to be initiation, but then finally initiation, true initiation, on the cardinal cross, because the cardinal cross theme, you begin to sense it. You catch the scent of it at the third initiation, which is really the first true initiation. Increasingly, these three crosses will take a prominent place in astrological delineation. All right, well, this has been Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 63, and it's been an hour and a half in duration. And we have gone from page 142 to some other page here. Let's see, where? To 147. Oh, is that possible? That many pages? All right, let's just see. 146 anyway. So we've gone from 142 to 146. All right, and now it is time for us to say the great invocation together. Yes, it's really time. And let's look here. Okay, from the point of light. Okay. We will do the great invocation together, ending our programs the way we usually do. Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, that's it for number 63, and we will continue studying Aquarius together. Number 64, we've dealt very much with fixed cross interplay in this section of the Aquarius chapter. So until then, we will see you. Thanks for participating, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.